Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that down. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wiggling.
Yeah, this is Cassidy the Hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Yeah, what it is, man. This your man, King Eric, the Media Assassin, and you're now tuned in to episode 545 of Off the Cuff Radio. And this show is sponsored by Buddy Boy Entertainment, sponsored by Fleetwood and the Cot Pickers, Screwball Radio, Core Financial, Jesse Boutique, Da Vinci Clothing, and that's all the sponsors right there. And we also got T-Max with the facts on the line.
What's going on, y'all? It's another Wild Out Wednesday on the freshest frequency on the internet to keep you interested. Off the Cuff Radio. Shout out to our co-host in spirit, Elida Sandman, Lady Chinchilla. We are live and direct, ready to communicate the very best of fresh to all of our faithful and loyal listeners out there. Tonight's show, and I know I say this all the time, we say this all the time, this is going to be a legendary show. In a long line of legendary shows we've done. The guest we have tonight, call him legendary is simply an understatement because there are so many other superlatives that could be described for all the achievement that this man has accomplished in his life in extraordinary fashion of entrepreneurship. His style of hustle never goes out of style at all. And it trends always in a direction of up, up, all the way up. Hailing from New York City, of course, in the Big Apple, is a city that never sleeps, where concrete jungles are made of. He was born in Washington Heights, along with some other luminaries, such as Manny Ramirez, Alice Rodriguez, and Belcatter Salmazar, who you all know as Cardi B. He has been a promoter, executive, who could forget the intros he did on the Clips albums, and most recently adding to his incredible career, he is one of the executive producers of Drink Champs, along with DJ EFN and, of course, Noriega. Ladies and gentlemen, we are so honored, we are so privileged, we are so humbled to have on the one, the only, Mr. Lee Sanchez. Que pasa, papi? Welcome, man. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite and the intro. That was a legend intro right there. How you guys doing?
We're good, man. Thank you so much. Dude, you know, Lee, your credentials are impeccable and outright incredible. To see what you have done in 20-plus years I mean, all we're asking is when are we going to get a book and who's going to play you in a movie, because you definitely deserve both. And we got people on deck for both of them. So,
hey.
Yeah, look, we got.
Hey, thank
we,
you,
we got
man.
All
I appreciate
yeah.
that.
Yeah, definitely not. Welcome to Off the Cuff Radio. I mean, look. No one can tell your story better than you can, and we got a lot to cover. So we're gonna get to it like we off to the races. Let's get it, man. Tell us a little bit about yourself growing up and where and how it all started, and now we're here. Let's go.
I mean, you know, I want to thank you guys for inviting me and having me in your show. It's an honor to be with you guys tonight. But it all started, I can say, probably since I was a kid. You know, I was in DR, in Dominican Republic, and my father came to visit us from New York. So he started telling me, like, well, so when you get to, you know, when you get to New York, we call it Nueva York. When you get to the North, also we call it the North. When you get to the North, you're probably going to be hanging out over there with rappers, and you're gonna, he started, like, rhyming to me. Rhyming. I was like, I think you're bugging out. Like, what are you thinking? He's like, no, you see, once you get there. Because I was in the process for the papers. I was born in DR. And so, yeah, you know, yeah, whatever. So then when I got to New York, I went to Evander Childs High School.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they filmed the movie The Bronze Tale.
Classic. Lilo
yeah,
Mercado,
so that's where it's like.
Paul Macheri, yeah. Robert De Niro, Terrell Hick, yeah.
Robert De Niro, yeah. No, it's a classic movie. It's a legendary movie. So, but
yes,
before that, my father used to own a video store in New York, like one of the Blockbuster, but like on the very, very beginning, he was one of the persons that had a video store. So he used to send me all type of movies to DR. So I was like, man, I like this. Like, this is cool being like a movie thing, but like, you know, I always wonder what the director looked like, what their job was, their duty was, the producer, everything. So I always looked like behind the scenes, behind the cameras. So I saw the movie Scarface, and I was like, oh man, I already knew. Like, I was going to school, I was taking English classes, and when I saw Scarface, I was like, definitely can do it.
Yeah, boy.
So, you know,
1983, yes, sir.
Yeah. So then I came to the United States. I thought it was going to be different because the first thing when I got to the Bronx, my father used to live in the Bronx. So the door lock, it was like, he had like 20 door locks, to be honest. And it was like, damn, I thought I was coming to paradise. This is how you got to live here? You got to have 20 locks. I was like, this is no good. This is no bueno right now.
No bueno.
I was like, this is no bueno right now. I'm an American boy. Yeah, so I was like, something different here. So then after that, my father goes to my room. He grabs a little 32 revolver from under the pillow. He goes, yo, you see this? This is you. Do not trust anyone here. Whoever comes through that door or that window, shoot him. I handle the rest. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? This is my New York, eh? I said, nah, I didn't come out here for this. It was like paradise, you know, like the way they describe it in DR. And DR, they used to tell you, like, when I was a kid, they used to say, oh, no, you found money in the streets over there. Like, they used to tell you, like, people would say that, like, seriously, like, that was like a reality, like, you're going to walk around New York City streets and you're going to find money in the streets. So that's the New York I had in my head. And then when I came in, I'm seeing all these things. Man, this is different. But I'm here already. So that's like when I first came here, which was like 89, 88. Then I started working in the video store. So I was like, man, this is good. I like this. So I started, then we was doing Sweet 16, birthday parties. And, you know, we used to hire camera crew. So from the camera crew, they were like, listen, you know, hold this. And I was like, man, this is good. I like it. I really like it. That's when I really, like, had my first taste. And I always, like, I always, that was part of my dreams, to be honest, like, to be behind the scene, to act. You know, like, I like entertaining. But I always wanted to become a soldier, like a cop, like, you know, I always had that in mind. I actually then went to, jumping around here, I went to college to become an FBI agent for homicide detective.
Oh, wow.
That's what I really wanted to know. Yeah. And then from there, he just God had another plan for me, another purpose.
I mean, you know, Lee, when we think about it in terms of, and you said you were off of the Dominican Republic, Santo Domingo?
Yeah.
Okay, Santo Domingo, yes. So when you think, you know, everybody a lot of times has, we all, no matter what walk of life we come from, we are always, whether we're born here or whether we immigrate here, America is indeed the melting pot of opportunity. You know, it's the land of the free, home of the brave. It's all about everybody trying to find their niche to get rich. Obviously, with you coming in, your dad already being an entrepreneur on the video store, would it be fair to say that you learned that business hustle, that acumen, that drive, that ambition from him?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. When it's ever from DR, when he went back to DR, because we were supposed, me and my sister were supposed to go to the embassy, the U.S. embassy, for an appointment. He went over there just for that. So that's why I was telling, that's why I told you about the car story, about him telling me, oh, you, when you get there, you're going to become a rapper, like the guys over there. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Because in DR, those years, there was no rap. It was all merengue, salsa, you know, our music and rap, too. So we never, I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what kind of music is this?
Right.
But I kind of, you know, I went with the flow with him. I said, oh, yeah, okay, boom, boom. And I just went with the flow with him. And I was like, hey, this is kind of cool. Like, I had, that's when I was like, the first time I was like, this is what you call entertaining? And then in DR, actually, I went with a friend. There was a TV show that it was about showing talent, like an American Idol type of show for, like, for kids.
Yep. Yes, sir.
And that was my first time in front of a camera. Me and my boy went because I knew the producer of the show, like my family. And they were like, just playing around, like, yeah, take my son, like, get him out of here, do something, like, put him on TV. So me and my friend, my neighbor, and my best friend that we still talk, and he lives here too, we went to sing a song. It was three of us from the same block. In DR, and that was the first time I was in front of the camera. I was like, man, all these lights and all these people looking at you. I just found that it was, like, cool. Like, yeah, I think this is one of the things I want to be in when I grow up, besides being a cop or a soldier.
I mean, when you think about it, Lee, you came up, and me and King, me and my brother, we always have jokes good-naturedly and with much respect. We always talk about the old New York. I mean, we're talking about, you know, and you talked about, you know, your dad was in the Bronx. So, I mean, you're talking about Bronx River houses. You're talking about Fordham. You're talking about Decatur, of course, Soundview. Shout out to Pistol Pete, SMM. I mean, of course, Forrest. Yeah. Shout out to Big Pun, rest in peace. Fat Joe and the Terror Squad. You know, Pistol Pete.
Yeah.
You know, that KR movement, all of them.
Minnesota.
I mean, growing up in
Lord Tariq, too, Peter Gunn.
Yeah. Yes, of course. Make it rain. You know, let it rain with what they did. I mean, of course, growing up in, you know, Washington Heights, you know, Alex Rodriguez, you know, Manny Rodriguez, Cartier from there. You know, and of course, when we talk about the music you were talking about when you were first introduced to hip-hop coming here, I can't help but think of the Latin artists as well, you know, from, you know, from the heritage, of course, Desi Arnaz, you know, Tego Calderon, you know, Rita Moreno, you know, so many. You know, so...
It's a lot of money.
What was it like watching, as you said, around 89? So we're a few years into hip-hop.
88.
As you know it from 88. So 88, we're a few years in. Yeah. About, Mathematically, one could say 10 from Sugar Hill Gang is 78 to 88, but even one could surmise maybe even in the mid-80s, of course, early 80s, going to rappers, you know, Sugar Hill Gang. I'm losing my train of thought, but I'm getting it back. Grandmaster Flash and Furious 5, The Message, 84. Of course, LL dropped Radio in 85. So we're seeing this whole movement that is nascent in culture, you know, born in the Bronx, 1520 Sedgwick, you know, in 1973, that is 8 years in and slowly but surely finding its footing. It is the representation for black and brown people who are marginalized in American society.
Mm-hmm.
So you're coming in roughly a decade into this. So we're seeing. So you heard Public Enemy. You heard N.W.A.
Oh yeah.
You heard X-Clan.
Uncle J, Rakim.
Yeah, LL Cool J. Yeah. Bad Boys. All of that.
Like,
man,
that's the people. Big Daddy Kane.
Those
are the people I used to listen to. These are the people I used to listen to, like Big Daddy Kane, LL Cool J. Well, not really LL Cool J, to be honest. Like, when I first came and I find out and I heard the first time I heard hip-hop, I was like, whoa, what's this? This is what my father was talking about in the car. This is the music he's talking about. So right away I got into it. Like, I love music. Music is just, it's like health to me. It just helps you. Like, if you're down, if you're stressed, if you're going through a bad day, you play some good music you like, and you, trust me, you're going to forget about everything. It's like music is like drugs. Like, when you smoke weed, you smoke a joint, you forget about any problems you have.
Absolutely.
And you just be happy. Like, no matter how bad was your day was today, you smoke a little joint, or that's why people go and they go and have a couple of drinks when they're having a bad day. When they're having a stressful day or a busy day, they say, I need to release some stress. Let me have a beer. Let me go have a glass of whiskey. So when I heard hip-hop, I was like, whoa, this is nice. This is good. I like this. So it was just another introduction from what I was used to. I was used to listening to merengue, salsa, you know, our music, and also rock. But when I heard hip-hop, I was like, man, this is good. It sounds good. Then from there, just to jump around a little bit, from there I started doing parties like in 97. I was always going to the clubs with my friends and everybody. We was always in the club. We used to go to this club named Latin Quarters on Sunday. That Norris used to be in the two all the time.
Man.
So we used to go there, and a friend of mine, and then the door guy, one day he goes, on the Sunday, he goes, oh, you know, Gungi said, yeah, you got to pay now to come in, Lee. I was like, pay? After I've been coming here and bring people? You crazy? So I'm not paying to get in here. So I called my older boy, that Gungi, the promoter of the event, kicked him out of the house, banned him from the club, from the party. So I called him. I said, yo, where you at? So he goes, oh, I'm in downtown. This club named System. I was like, System? I said, yeah, I'm going to go down there because Gungi's trying to charge me. I was saying, fuck that guy. Come over here. So when I get back, you know, I was already friends with Jay, Big, like with JC, Big, Dame, all of them. I was already friends at that time in 97, 96, 95, around there. I already knew Biggs from Rockefeller, one of the owners.
When I get there,
I see them, they were all in there. They were like, I'm like, what's this? I was like, man, this club is popping. But it was like a different crowd. It wasn't the Spanish crowd. It was like black, white, and a couple of Spanish guys, because I was there. My boy was there. So he's looking at this guy. He's like, yo, wait a minute. You know JC and all these people. JC was JC, but not JC this era JC, you know? But JC was still JC.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, I know him from Uptown. And he would always go to Uptown and say, man, why don't you do parties with me? Parties? What do you mean? How does it work? So look, me and George, it was Deep Something, his company. We just booked a boat at the Queens of Heart. It's called Queens of Heart, and the Lower East Side. So this is our budget. This is how much it's gonna cost.
We're selling tickets at this price. You try to sell tickets. If you sell tickets, then you know you can do it. If you don't, you don't. But you know everyone. You're always out. You're always partying. That's spending money. And don't you rather make money while you're partying, having fun, and having all your friends come over like we were doing basement parties, like in the basement when we used to go to the basement? Like in New York, Uptown, that was the party was in the basement before. So I was like, that sounds like a plan.
Mm-hmm.
So then we did the first boat party, and it was like we did really good. Like we sold a bunch of bottles. We made like each of them, we made like $12,000. I was like, $12,000 in 4 hours?
Wow.
And I was like, I sold 200 tickets, and like I sold 200 tickets by myself. Oh, this is my my stepping stone.
Yeah.
That was my stepping stone. And then I started doing the parties, and then we did like four boat parties. The second one, Jay came. That's what gave me more power, because they were like, damn, these kids are just doing parties right now, this boat party. They got Jay-Z here. That's crazy. So from there, everyone wanted to come to our party that we was doing. Then that same year, in 97, we came to Miami. Which I didn't want to come either. And they were all my friends. I know we go to Miami Labor Day week, and you're going to have a ball. This night. And trust me, if you're getting, I don't want to curse, but if you're getting chicks out here.
No. you can say it out here. You can say it on a cup, whatever you want to say, Lee. Yeah. It's like drink champs. Hey. It's your second home.
All right. So they were like, man, if you're getting a lot of ass, yeah, you might think of Miami. I was like, really? Okay, fuck it, let's go. So I used to work too at a garage. I used to park cars. Yeah, I used to park cars in 55th Street and in 10th Avenue on the west side. So that's where I met Jam Master J, rest in peace, Guru from Gangsta.
Yeah.
Because they used to go to the studio, Sony Studio. And they used to come to my garage and park the car. And then from there, we became tied. Like, Guru was my man. Like, Gangsta was... Guru used to get so drunk. I got a good story. That guy used to get so drunk, and he wanted to fight everybody. I used to be like, man, you got to relax. Like, we had to have fun. I had to try to fight. But that guy was wild. He used to get drunk. Mm-hmm. And he was one of my favorite artists, too, from that era.
Oh, yeah. I mean...
Yeah, he was a good dude, too.
Mm.
But then, when I came to Miami, my boy was like the same guy, Ray. He was like, listen, I think we should try to do parties in Miami. But Miami back then, like in 96, 97, it was a hard, like, if they didn't know you wasn't going to get in the club, no matter how much money you're spending. And they were racing with Dominicans. Like, not with Dominicans, with New Yorkers. If you were from New York, if you get pulled over and you show that New York ID to the cops out here in Miami Beach, in those years, it was a problem. And we used to just come and have fun. Yeah, so we started doing parties here, and I started meeting a lot of other rappers that we used to book them. And then the Clips, I met them. I was the first one to bring him to Miami for the first show ever. And from there, we became tight, and that's how the relationship with them. Well, Jadakiss and Rough Friday, you knew them already. I used to do the after parties for the Rockefeller and Rough Friday, too. I'd be all the Rough Friday's after party. And I used to run around with Eve, like helping my friend Bundo. He was the DMX world manager. He was Eve's manager. So he couldn't go with both of them. At the same time, he would anything go. You want to go with Lee? Can you handle that? He would go with X or either way. So that was my way to Rough Riders. And then I was doing all the after parties. So that got my name even more, out there.
I mean,
so then I
mean, Lee.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, Lee, I mean, we're listening to all of this history, and it's, I mean, because I'm about to run in a whole bunch of different directions, like an octopus, with more legs. But I think about what you were saying about Jay-Z. Shout out to my HBCU, Norfolk State University in Norfolk, Virginia. It was him, Foxy Brown, and AZ and the homecoming of 1996. This shit is still legendary. I mean, this is fucking damn near 30 years later, and niggas are still talking about it. True story, y'all. This is back in 97 when I used to work at Foot Locker. Shout out and rest in peace to Military Circle Mall. I seen this tall, like, light brown dude just walking with a do-rag and a white beater on. And then I realized, it's Jay-Z. You know, he's just walking the mall by himself. It's like 7 in the evening, and he just walking, no security. So this is like Jay before. This was the Jay then that was dope. This is Reasonable Doubt in my lifetime, pre-Hard Knock Life, because this is 97, so Hard Knock Life drops in 98. So Jay is dope, but Jay has not really kicked that door down yet. Of course,
yeah.
Rest in peace, Big. He passes in 97. I'm saying all this to say, Lee, I mean, you knew these guys before they got big. What was it like watching their career? You know, Biggie started with Party and Bullshit off the Who's the Man soundtrack in 1992. That was his first official song before, you know, he would do, of course, then, of course, 93, him and Puffy would do the Dolly My Baby remix with Supercat. you know, Jay had his Can't Get With That from 1994. Of course, he was on the original Flavor, Beyond Flavor in 94 with Can I Get Open? Of course, even before that with Big Jazz in 1988, he was on Hawaiian Soap.
Mm-hmm.
So this history is expansive, and you're in the middle of all of this. What is it like watching them grow from there to see where they were and where they got to? And we haven't even gotten to Rough Riders with DMX yet. I mean, God, I mean, Lee.
Well, like the people that I really met before they became even signed to a label, because JC was already JC at the time when I first met him.
Yes, sir.
Like, he was already known out there. Like, I think he even had a deal, a record. Like, you know, they were doing already putting out music on their own, independent.
Right.
But
that's
like
they got
DMX,
a priority, Reasonable Doubt. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. With Reasonable Doubt, correct.
Yeah, that was already.
Yeah, he was already put on. He already had a deal.
Mm-hmm.
So then, but like the Lox, Dragon, Eve, DMX, like I was there when this guy, I forgot his name, part of Rough Riders, he brought DMX to the studio.
Mm-hmm.
And we was like, we heard it, and we was like, oh, shit, this guy. Because of my boy, Bunda, like I say, I met them all through him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's Dominican, too. And I was like, everybody just looked at him. So I already knew, like, his story, where he came from, where he was known, where he was just DMX, signed to a label, to a new record label named Rough Riders. And then the Lox, I was there. I wasn't in the office. I wasn't, like, part of it. But I was there when the Lox got signed to Puff. I actually was teaching one time because I used to, you know, my cousin there, one of my cousins, he's a geek. Like, he, when it comes to computer, he's like that guy is super smart. So he used to connect the phones. Like, you know, the phones that we use now, cell phones? I was in high school with one of them, with the big phones, because of them, because they used to connect them. Yeah, they found a way to connect the phones, and I was hustling those phones. I was selling it to all the drug dealers from uptown, from New York, everyone I know. And I was in high school.
The Nino Brown phone.
I was in high school. Yeah.
The $3 minute phone.
Yeah. No, not even three. That was like $5, $10 maybe for a minute. So we used to, connect them. So he used to connect them. So I was like 14, 15 years old and high school with a cell phone. I was like, how this kid got a cell phone? But they were all connected in the side. So she, for their deal with Bad Boy, they got flip phones, which he was the one, the first phone to flip, like that you open them up. And
the Motorola,
the Motorola, And then I had an Asian girl through my boy that put me on with the party. He knew he had a connecting AT&T that used to sell that. She used to get them for us, and we used to sell them too. So I already knew how they work. So I was selling. She was trying to use his, and I was, we was at a club in downtown. I don't remember where. And he was like trying to use his phone. I was like, oh, you don't know how to use it. You, yo, you just got them, right? He goes, yeah. I said, hey, let me show you. And I started teaching him how to use the cell phone. So I already knew the Eve, too, when she first got signed to Rough Riders, mm-hmm. too. Like, those people, I knew them when they were, like, just a regular person. He was a dancer. DML was just sleeping in the roof of the thing or buildings, robbing people. And Jadakiss and The Locks, they were all, like, still dealing and stuff and Yonkers. Like, I saw them grow. I saw them be... I watched them became who they became now. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, from that era to now, they're still the same people. Mm-hmm. At least with me. Not only with me, like I have a friend of mine that they met, let's say, Kiss 5 years ago, Eve or DMX, and they used to stop and say, yo, you Lee's boy, right? Oh, you Lee's friend. And they used to be so happy. They were like, man, your boy, yo, Jadakiss or Kiss or Styles or any of them, they saw me. They remember me from when you introduced me to them. And they never changed. They're still the same, but the music just grew. And people like Styles, like Kiss, like I see them rhyming and Jay also, like, and they still got it. Like, I'm like, damn, these people, how can they write so many bars for so many years and never fail? Like him, like them too, Jay-Z, DMX, Jadakiss, the Styles. I'm like, this guy is crazy. 20 years, 30 years, and they're still dropping bars. And I'm a big fan of them. So to me, they just got bigger with their career and lyrically wise. And that's what I like. I like lyrics. Like, I don't really like so many of these young, you know, I respect them. I like the music. I'm in the club, vibing to them. But like they say, I'm an 80s boy. Like, I like Jay-Z. I like Eminem. I like X, Scarface, Guru, Rakim. Those are the people that really inspire me to do what I'm doing now. And from doing the parties, I met the Clips, hanging out with them in the studio with Pharrell. That's how come the whole thing with the intro that I did with the Clips because of Pharrell. But already in 97, a friend of mine named is Minnesota from Soundview. Mm-hmm. He asked me one day, listen, I want you know, let's go shop around for music. I'm like, okay, you know, back then it was vinyls. So I was like, yeah, what you want? Like, what kind of music are we looking for? He's like, oh, no, I just want, like, old school Spanish music. But then he says, whatever you think it's fire now, or it was fire before, old school, just pick them for me. So I picked a few of them, and I was like, oh, this is the good one. Boom, he heard them. He took a sample from that goes, bing, 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 bing. That's, I think that's the Gran Combo, or one of them big salsa guys from Puerto Rico. So he made a beat. Mm-hmm. He called Lottery from Lottery and Peter Gunn. He said, man, I got this beat, but we got to put Lee on it. So he's like, what do you mean we got to put Lee on? I said, yeah, come to the studio. I'm going to call him too. So we went to the studio, me and Tariq, and Tariq heard the beat. He liked the beat. Right away, he got on it. And they were like, yo, Lee, now you do your thing. I'm like, do my thing. Like, what do you mean, do my thing? Like, I'm not a rapper. Like, what are you talking about? He's like, listen, just go in the booth. The same thing, more or less the same thing that Pharrell did with me. And, well, it was, Pharrell came up with the name of Pusha. He said, just go in the booth. Just do whatever you want. Then he just guided me through, you know. Then I just went in the booth and I just did a song. And we did a song named Corazon. At that time, it was really like it was getting play and the radio and everything. But Tariq was supposed to get his own deal. And I don't know what happened with it. They didn't just work out. But that song was like, it was already like gone. It was about to blow up because the song
it was pretty big. And to today's day, you still play, and it sounds like you did it, it was done today. So that's how, you know, since 97, I already had that song. Like, I consider myself the first Spanish hip-hop song ever. I did it. Like, the first hip-hop artist with a Spanish guy, it's me, now that I think about it.
I mean, you're part of that.
Like, you know, like a mix between a hip-hop, and Spanish music,
yeah.
A Spanish guy. Nobody had done it. It was just Fat Joe, but Fat Joe was a hip-hop artist. He wasn't like
right.
a Spanish artist.
Right.
And I'm like, you know what? I told Nori one day, I said, Nori, because in the song he goes, oye, mi gente, deje esta chequeando la otra gente, deje esta choteando, robando y tumbando, chequea tu familia. Y verás que toditos venimos de la misma ruta. Dominican, Puerto Rican, Dominicano, Boricua, Dominicano, Mexicano, Cubano. Let's all get together and get the same money, basically. Because I spit it in Spanish. So I told Nori one day, man, I think I was the first one to do Oye Mi Canto. You know, his song, Oye Mi Canto, his reggaeton song. He goes, Boricua, Morena, Dominicana, Colombiana.
Yeah,
that was Nori.
Man, I mean, and Lee, this is like 97 too. Now, you mentioned Pharrell. Now, this is where the hometown bias comes in. Shout out to the Clips, Pusha and Malice. I've had the chance to meet those guys a few times. Always respectful.
Great guys.
Tremendous. Yeah, absolutely. I told you, Lee, because I've
been educated too.
Yeah, I've been buttering you up all week because I still got some more stuff to send you. Because all that stuff I sent you so far,
okay.
That ain't it. I still got more. I still got more.
You know
what's
wild,
what's wild too is
that we just touching on 97. And see, 97 was, people were considered that to be the year that Bad Boy ran things. But look at how the Rough Riders emerged, Murder Inc. emerged, Rockefeller emerged. Like, you've seen a melting pot of New York City really coming in to take over.
About
Noriega
too. The Firm. Cam'ron too came out in 98. I think Nori and Cam'ron was head to toe in 98. Yeah, 98.
Yeah.
But
and then we still not even get into a Cash Money.
In 97.
Right.
And not even, Cash Money came right after that,
98, that's when they broke through.
Yeah, 98 too. Yeah, that's when they broke through, sure.
And
then you think about
the clip. We got a call. Hey, T-Max, hold on 1 second. Then we got a caller on the live from a 445 caller. 445, you want
it? Yes, it's May again. I'm just listening to you guys. You just took me all the way back. Talking about the good music. That's what I'm talking about. I love that era. And like you said, just to know that those guys still have it, you know, the guys that you named, they are definitely some ghosts. They were never meant to be a one-hit wonder. Never. It's in them.
That's true. She got a point.
Yes.
In them. That's how you can separate. That's how you can separate. You know, the real ones from those. You know, the ones that are just in the game. And I think we talked about this before. You have people that are in the rap game, so they're not in it for the longevity. It's about the glitz and the glam. But these guys are in the rap business, and that's why they're still along. That's why they're still around. You know, they took what they learned in the industry, and they made something absolutely amazing out of it. All of those guys, they are absolutely, I mean, top of the line. Top of the line.
Facts.
Absolutely.
yes.
Nah, that's a fact.
When we're in 97 too, before we get ahead, we got to think about, you know, Pusha and Malice when they dropped the song The Funeral. That was off exclusive audio footage.
Yeah.
It was released on Elektra Records, which for real.
Yeah.
You know, of course, him and Chad, the Neptunes, what they did executive producing. They did the whole damn album, which did not get released.
Mm-hmm.
And then 5 years later in 2002, Lord Willin drops When Grindin' Hits. And it just totally just turns the whole hip-hop world up on its head. You know, both of them, you know, born in the Bronx, but they were raised here in, you know, Hampton Roads, Virginia Beach specifically, Indian Lake.
Yeah.
Neighborhood. So, I mean, the history with those guys is very long. It's very, yeah. But, yeah, very long.
No, actually from Soundview. They're from Soundview, Bronx.
Okay, Soundview. Okay, Soundview from Project. The same, Bronx.
Yeah, from Lower Merion area. It was Lower Merion, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Clips, they're all from Zambia, but they moved at I think it was like the age of 8 or something like that.
Right.
That they moved to to Virginia.
Yeah, but to see them really like put on for this area, because there are a lot of artists that try to sound like others from other places, and the Clips, God bless them both, they have never ever ran from being from Virginia. They have always digged up the 757. I got an old picture of them on my digital camera. I got to send you too, Lee. I just got to figure out how to get that thing out of that out of it. But like I said, those are two tremendous individuals that you know, to just see what they did with Lord Willing was a great album.
It's a classic.
It was a great album. But Hell Hath No Fury, where Lord Willing was great, Hell Hath No Fury just blew the doors off the hinges. I was like, oh my God.
They show the world what they really can do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, they do, they
those two guys together, Yeah. No, they show the world what they can do when they came out with Grinding. And it took Grinding for a minute, like 6 months, 8 months, to really, like, people start paying attention.
That's
the song that really, that me and my boy Phil, that used to do the parties with me, that's the song we was like, oh, wait a minute, who are these kids? Yeah, we need them in our party. We used to do a Thursday party named NBA, Nothing But Ass Thursdays. We even had a problem with the NBA because we used to call it NBA, and we had the logo like the NBA. But instead of the guy, we had a girl with a nice body. And the NBA rep called us, hey, you guys got to get rid of that. The name of your
acronym.
I'm like, what? Yeah, what are you talking about? And that was the name of the party, NBA, Nothing But Ass, Thursday. So we booked it for that day.
I wonder what your logo look like.
Man,
I should look for that logo. I should look for the flyer. I'm gonna call my boy. He probably got it. And then we was like, man, our party. We was like happy. We got a call from the NBA, right? Talking about, yo, you guys got a, you can't use that logo. And we're like, what logo? It's not your logo. You got a female. It's nothing but ass. Like, you can't really do it. Like, we had to like go back and forth with them. But we was happy. It was a, man, the NBA caller? That's how good our party is right now. He was like, we got to take it to the next level.
He like, my nigga, we made it.
We booked the Clips. I was like, whoa. It got to the NBA ears. I mean, that everybody knows about this party.
That's how you shake it up.
Then,
you have to be creative with your marketing.
Yeah, of course. Even when you make a flyer, you got to make sure that flyer looks like let's say you're walking down the street and you see a flyer on the floor. Like, I come from that era, from the flyer era, right? That you walk over a flyer if you didn't like the flyer, if you didn't like just the graphic or the flyer. But if you see a flyer and then it catch your attention for whatever gimmick, whatever they, doesn't matter how you design it, but if you design it in a way that's going to attract people's eye, you get down and you grab the flyer.
Yes.
So we always was creative with the flyers, and we got to, you know, let's focus on that. Let's try to do something that is going to make us get down on the floor and pick it up. So that's how come we got the Thursday, nothing but us.
Now, Lee, now when you did this, now, and Nate knows this as well because she's the ACE manager as well. You both come from that school of the Hustle Hard University. because you all were coming up doing this at a time before social media became a thing. Now, we know about Live Quarter. We know about Studio 54. We know about The Tunnel. I mean, and those are just the clubs.
Oh, we haven't even gotten into The Tunnel.
Go ahead, Lee. Go ahead with The Tunnel, Lee, because we know you got some stories with that, too. Go ahead.
I was never a fan of it. But I went for DMX. Which song? You know that song that he got the video at the tone? I don't know if you guys know. That's the tone on the, I think it's Get At Me, Dog.
Yeah, that was down the tunnel.
Yeah,
take it back to the streets, motherfucker.
Yeah, I was there that day. And that was
wow.
No, the energy in there is so crazy that people, that's why they used to search it, like you was coming into Rikers Island or to in jail,
yeah,
to visit someone in jail.
74.
They search like your feet, everything they were searching. I was like, I don't want to go to a place like that. I got to get searched like that. You're crazy, but what? But the energy in there is crazy. And it was a bunch of dudes. It was like 300 dudes, 10 girls, 5 girls. I'm like, for what? I'm in my block every day with a bunch of dudes. Why would I want to come to a place named The Tunnel? Like, you got to research, man. It was just crazy. But The Tunnel was classic. But I used to go, like, JC used to go there big. This is the place that we used to, all of us, like, go. Because it was, like, kind of like, we kind of was, like, a little, like, you know, like, you and your crew, like, but you always have a crew to go to the club with. You got a crew to hang out in the block. You got a crew to go cruise around. If you guys smoke, then you guys just, oh, let's go on the West Side Highway and let's smoke a joint. And you just take the West Side Highway and you smoke a blunt. And then you got your crew, too, that you will go out to the clubs, like your club crew, your black crew, and your school crew. So kind of, we were kind of like that. We was going to the same party, like Cheetahs on Mondays. In Miami, when Jay came out with the Big Pimpin' Party, I did it at that.
Man. Oh,
and it was crazy. That party was insane. It was like the
nigga,
days
we just saw
crazy.
The video. We just saw the video, so we knew the video was a good time. Man. And see, I've never been to Miami.
Man, that party
myself,
I don't miss
so it. I could only imagine.
No?
I've never been to Miami.
Oh, no, in those years, Miami was...
I've been to Florida,
you're missing a lot. But it's not the same as those years. Those years, 97, 96, 98,
oh, yeah.
Miami was like top of the line. Like, Miami was just... The lifestyle was just... It was stupid rich. And then you was hanging out with Richard Gere. You was hanging out with this guy, Versace. Rest in peace. Madonna.
Yeah, Johnny Versace.
Sammy Sosa and all those young Versace, yeah. This is the people that was hanging out, that was standing next to you at the bar, and you're like, am I really having a drink with Richard Gere or Madonna too?
Oh, wow.
A few chairs down? Yeah, it was like that. You sit on the beach on Ocean Drive. Is there like a cafeteria? Then next, News Cafe. They just reopened that again. And these people that I'm mentioning, they were used to sit there every morning, drink coffee and read newspaper, have breakfast. And you were just hanging out with Madonna two tables down. That's how Miami used to be.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was like,
I mean,
if you were smoking a joint, Miami still is. But Miami before, it was so different. It was so different. So that's why it also helped me out with everyone, with my whole, with the clothes, with the concierge business that I opened up after that. Even with the clothes that I designed, it was just everything came from the clothes. Everything came from basically hip-hop, to be honest, because I wasn't doing no rock music, no rock parties. It was all hip-hop. So I could say hip hop saved my life.
We will never forget Busta Rhymes. I believe it was the 2000 Grammys, or was it 2002? And he said these famous words: "If it wasn't for hip hop, a lot of us wouldn't have jobs." You know,
it's true.
And
yeah, I hear that.
Like you, yeah. When you think about it, Lee, because Miami has been considered New York South because it's the equivalent, especially like you said during that time. You know, King and myself, you know, so many of, you know, young niggas from our generation, our first introduction to Miami life was through Scarface, 1983. Shout out Al Pacino, you know, and Rocky and Chivita. You know, I mean, that was just, I mean, of course, and Miami Vice, the television show, of course, shout out Don Johnson and Philip Michael Thomas. And then, of course, we haven't even gotten a Two Live Crew yet. I mean.
Yeah.
You know,
True Life Crew, they're legendary.
Yeah, I mean, and then look at the music that came behind it. I mean, you had Clay D, you had, you know, Splat Pack, you know, shout out, you know,
yeah.
Uncle Head, you know, and Q Dog,
JT Money,
DJ Magic, yeah, JT Money, Poison Clan will come later. I mean, DJ Magic Mice, you know, Bass the Final Frontier, you know, even though they're not from Miami, 69 Boys, you know, and 90, you know, I mean, they embodied that whole bass sound, the 808 that made it great, that made the Sunshine State great. You know, I mean, Miami for us, when we saw the videos, was just one big ass party that we all wanted to go to and never leave. So, you know, when you found your way down there, Lee, and you really saw what was going on, because obviously you have your concierge business, you know, and your clothing line. We want you to go into detail about those as well. What was just the most captivating thing about it down there that you were like, okay, like, we really, really got to open up shop down here. You know, we got to, you know, we got to give Tony Montana the line. He's like, this sounded like a great big pussy waiting to be fucked.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, when I came to Miami, the first time I landed and I saw Miami, I really I fell in love with the city. I fell in love with the place, the whole, the weather, everything, the way just everything was. It was cleaner. It's cleaner. Mm-hmm. And most of it reminds me of my country. It reminds me of DR. Because
mm-hmm.
the DR has a lot of places that you go through and you're like, oh, you know, this reminds me of Miami. Or Miami, there's a lot of places you go by, you drive by. But like, oh, it's like, to me, like only probably a Dominican can see where I'm coming from, even feel it too.
Right.
So that's one of the reasons that I said, damn, Miami's like DR in year 3000, who knows, but, you know, it's very advanced, but it's DR. And I was like,
mm-hmm.
I think I can live here. I think I don't like New York anymore. Because New York was the only place that we had seen before. And Boston, I think Boston too. Boston's a nice
mm-hmm.
city.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first thing that really like got me. Miami, the way Miami got me, I can say. Miami, like how we said, Miami locked me down. From that moment, I was like, man, this reminds me of DR. I can live here. And that was a weekend. And I just never went back. I used to go back to New York just to do my party. I used to do BB Kings on Saturday. Baba Lazar, mm-hmm. like three parties every weekend. So we just go in the weekend, come right back Sunday morning. Sunday right after the club.
Man. And we can't even forget about the University of Miami football team. I mean, God knows. Those years were legendary to watch them play. I mean, Michael Irvin, Russell Maryland. I mean, you know, Craig Erickson, Lamar Thomas, Jerome. Man, I mean, that was just, I mean, Miami was just a place to be.
Good spot.
Yeah.
It was the L.A. South.
Yeah. When you think about the promotion game, Lee, how was it different than what it is today? Because back in the day, it's like you really had to grind. I mean, you know, like you said, you had the flyers and everything. But you all really had to build those connections with people. You know, you really had to work. You really had to get your ear to the street to understand, not necessarily even though it was an imperative, what was popular, but also what was coming next. It was about innovation. It was about attraction. It was about making every event the main event. You know,
it was going. It was about going out every night and just spreading the word and giving out flyers to everyone you see in the street and the club. Like, that's the way we used to do it. Like, we had to go every night and go out. Remember, there was no phones. We had the two-ways after that.
Yeah.
But there was no phone. There was no way to contact, send a picture, put it on social media. Like, I think a lot of the promoters now, they would never, a lot of them probably wouldn't even have a chance to become a promoter unless they really liked it because it was a business. They saw it as a business. To us, it was a business. Like, we never saw, like, to become popular or not. It's about making money. We got to make this money. This is what we're here for. Because you had to be like that because otherwise we wouldn't make no money. Because back in the days, there was no bar percentage. There was no, like, the clubs putting up the money for the DJ, for the whole expense, for the whole budget. Because you have to come up with your money out of your pocket to pay for DJs, pay the whole staff, pay a rental fee to the club, and still be able to make some money. So you have to be like, you have to see it, you have to look at it like a business. I said, wait a minute, because everyone and all your friends that you invite, they want to get in for free. That was the only way for you to make money back then. Now it's easy. Now it's like, that's you post a flyer on social media, and that's it. Like, people don't even interact with the friends that we used to. Like, and we used to call the people's house or go to them. Yo, you're going to, oh, yeah, I'm going to come see you. Next month, I got my party on Saturday at this place. Come through. Here's a flyer. That's how you used to do the invite and try to get people to your party. Listen, I have DJ Camilo DJing this Saturday at this place next month. Now it's easy. Now you put it the same day of the party, the day before, 2 days before, a week before.
People don't even socialize these spots these days.
Exactly. They don't socialize. They just post a flyer. Look, I'm a flyer. If you like it, you like it. If you don't like it, I'm not calling you. But back then, it was too hard. Yeah, it's like, it's lazy.
That's true.
I still do it like that. Yeah, like, that's one of the reasons I stopped doing parties, like, my own parties, because I didn't want to be in the club every day and just dealing with the same thing and all that stuff. I'm like, and I like all the stuff. So from the same parties, but that's like, that opened the door to this whole new phase in my life. And to me, it's another whole new planet. I call it planet. Cause from what I wanted to become to what I became, it's the opposite.
And he's so right about that, King Guys. He's really, really right about that because, you know, back then you had to be out and about all the time, and it can be tiresome, you know. So a lot of the guys that are doing it now, I don't think they would have been able to make it through the time that Lee and I were doing it when we first started, because I can remember when I first started, I was like, oh, my goodness. We had, like, stacks of flyers, and then, you know, we had to sell our own tickets too, and you know, it's hard work. It's hard work. It's so much easier now. But, you know, for the people that are in it for the longevity, we still love it. So we make sure we take extra care still, even when it comes down to our flyers and stuff like that, because you can't just put something out there and then expect to have a great turnout. You have to take care in anything that you do. And like Lee said, like for me, I have no regrets because, like what he said just now, you know, it opened up a whole different planet for me now. So, you know, I don't have to do as much as I had to do back then. I don't have to do as much now because now, you know, those doors from all that hard work and the people that I built rapport with over the years, you know, it's a lot easier now than it was back then.
There's a lot of issues. Yeah. It's like a piece of cake for me. And for most of like people like you, like me, now we know how it works or how it was back then. And now that's why I started the concierge service. I was like, because everyone that knew me, including celebrities, they were like, they used to ask me, Lee, you out there? Can you get me a car? Can you get me a house? Can you get me this? So I was like, you know what? I think I can stay away a little bit from the clubs and make even more money if I focus more on the concierge. So I stopped doing the parties. But what I do, I just send those clients, I send them, you know, I set them up with tables, VIP tables. So I'm still involved with the parties. I'm still with the club. I don't think I will never stop.
Let's just look at it too. Now, this is that you don't even know if the promoter or the owners is pretty much capping, because they be figuring, oh, I could get a picture with a celeb. Like, let's say I get a picture with Jeezy. They go automatically, they go big time. But then when they post the picture, then you see the draw house, and you like, hold up. People, if he's taking pictures with Jeezy, why is this guy drawing just 30 people through his club? Something ain't adding up.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
Math ain't math then.
Mm-hmm. So that's how I started with the concierge service. That's true. Concierge service started.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
So, yeah, no, it just, you know, that's the way the concierge started, me trying to stay away from the club. Being in the club every day was like, okay, I got to do something else. Because I can stay still either. It's just in me. You know, just doing one thing in a day, like I got too many hours.
And I mean, you're an entrepreneur. So the entrepreneur is always looking for the next thing.
Yeah, exactly. I think that is the right answer. No, it's like we can stay still with one person. Meaning, not one person like Dane.
Right. So that's just being a creative in general. Now, Lee, around this time, because in the 90s, you know, there's this guy who was born in New Orleans who was a radio DJ who transported himself to Miami. I think you know him by the name of DJ Khalid. You know, of course, you know, DJ Khalid. He had already made it to Miami. You know, of course, Fat Joe and a lot of the crew, you know, during that time, he kind of already, you know, Joe was coming down to Miami a little bit more. Slip and Slide, shout out Ted Lucas and all of them were already making moves. You know, Trick Daddy, you know, coming out of there. Trina were doing their thing. And then there's this guy, you know, the Teflon Don. That was his original rap name before everybody knows him now. Today is Rick Ross. Shout out Rose, you know, Jeter K, Flab, the whole crew. So you're like plugged in. You're meeting all of these people as they come along. So you're seeing the first iteration of your hip-hop voyage in New York. And now you're seeing this second iteration in Miami. What was it like watching this new wave of Florida, not only just Miami artists, but Florida artists in general, like Flo Rida, Plies, and all of them, you know, Pretty Ricky, all of them, come along?
I got a nice story for you with Pitbull. Pitbull, I was doing Eve album release party in Miami in this club named Levels. Now it's Mansion 2. So it used to be called Levels. So I was doing Eve album release party. It was for spring, but March, I think it was March 12th, actually. But I think it was 2000. It was 98 or 99 when Eve dropped her album.
Drunk
so,
Rider, First Lady,
you know,
that was 99.
Yeah.
And her second album, Scorpion, came out in 2001.
No, it was the first one. It was the first album. So it was
okay, the first album.
99.
Got it.
Yeah,
yeah,
so
yeah.
There was a lady from EMI that contacted me and my boy that was doing the party. And she was like, man, I got this artist. You guys should listen to him. And I want him to perform for this party, because this party was going to be like, it was going to be an epic party. They already knew that, the lady. So I was like, oh, yeah, you know, let me listen to it. If we, you know, if we like it, if it's nothing that's not going to fuck up a crowd, you know, we let him play for, you know, but you got to pay us. And she's like, yeah, no problem. I was like, oh, okay. We play the music, and I actually liked that. I was like, man, this guy, I think this guy can do something. I think this guy can make it. Like, I think he's good. So then when he performed, the payoffs, I think it was like $2,500 they gave us.
Mm-hmm.
And when he got on stage to open up for Eve and the whole Rough Rider, I was like, oh, shit, look, he got the crowd jumping. Man, he's going to be good. Like, he's good. I told the girl, I said, listen, I think that guy Pibble is going to be pretty good. Just find the way out, you know. Just find his, you know, like his style, like his flow. Direct him the right way, and then people became people like that. Those years, that's when after that, what's his name? What's in the DJ's name?
Kali.
Oh my God! How am I gonna fuck that? No, not Kylie.
What's his name? King, who is it? Because you're just as good as this shit, too.
That's who Pimple was signed to.
Lil Jon.
Lil Jon.
Correct. Yo, Lil Jon.
Yeah, Lil Jon. Yeah,
Little John, and then the guy that owns that's like a soul food restaurant here in Miami. The guy that owns that restaurant, he used to manage Pitbull, and through him,
okay.
I think they met with Little John, and Little John signed them. And that was a career that I saw from the beginning too, I can say, and it was like the change in Pitbull, like his style, his flow. And the way and the direction he took from trying to be a hip hop artist to become he's like a pop, right? He's pop basically. Yeah, he went straight commercial and it worked out for him.
But it's all about finding your lane. Now, of course, in the process of all this, there's another DJ outside of Lil Jon, because, yes, he is a DJ, y'all. Check his history in Atlanta, because he was doing house parties heavy, going back to like 95, 96. And, of course, DJ Khaled. But then there's another one, DJ EFN, who's also just as integral to that a lot of people don't talk about his history. How did you and EFN meet?
Yeah. I think we met... EFN used to do the promotion for Def Jam, the marketing, and the street team in Miami, and Crazy Horse. So I think at one point, me and my boy Phil, we hired EFN's team to give out flyers, to be our street team and give out flyers for our party. And I think I met him through Phil, my boy Phil, the one I used to be.
Phil the mayor.
Over here, they call him Phil the mayor. Yeah, correct.
Yes, sir.
So I think that's how I met E. Actually, EFN met Nori through Phil too, I think. I think it was Phil introduced him too, if I'm not mistaken. And EFN is like you. EFN got like a vault full of just hip hop legendary moments and pictures and tapes and what with that tape. What is it, the other he got everything that has to do with hip hop. Just like you sending me pictures and all the archives you have, if it's just like you, he just comes out with a long play for 1920. He's sarcastic. He keeps everything.
Yeah,
he got a
vault
of history in hip hop.
Yeah. So basically this is you and EFN, you know, when y'all connect. Because Drink Champs, I don't believe, started until 2016. how did it come about with you, him, and Nori coming together? Because what you all have done, you all set a bar for hip-hop journalism that has never been set. You inspired, I've been with King on this journey with him for the past 6 years. He started Off the Cuff Radio in 2014. But you all really, really gave us a blueprint from really, really how to move in terms of conducting interviews, to really get guests comfortable, to just really, you know, just really show appreciation for their careers. I mean, the people you've had on the show have just, it's a Hollywood Walk of Fame, Hall of Fame hip hop. It's a think piece. It's a good time. It's history. It's a repository for all of the culture all in one. And I'm just being, and I'm only using just a small description of how legendary and great what you all have established has become. Where did the idea come from?
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Where did the idea
actually
come from for us?
Dream Champs really came, it was between Nori and EFN. But I believe EFN was the one that come out and try to, like, push it to Nori, like, because they used to hang out and just get drunk, basically, and do a game. We call it a Dream Champs game. It was a game, whoever lasted the longest drinking. So I think EFN told Nori once, hey, man, we should do it like a radio. We should do a radio show or something. Since we're doing it right now, why not do it and, like, you know, and get paid? Kind of like I did with clubs. Hey, man, partying, having fun, drinking, and getting paid for it? I'm in. So I think that's how the whole party. And then they got a deal with, that's how the name became, that's how the show became Dream Champs, because they used to call it that show, the game they used to play. They call it Dream Champs, you know, whoever drinks that lasts the longest drinking, then that's the Dream Champs. So that's how the name came about. But I don't think they called it Dream Champs. But XM Radio Sirius, I think it was, the one, you know, they was going to give them a contract, but they told him, now, but you got to move to New York. And no, he was like, I'm not moving to New York. I just moved to Miami. Like, I like it here. So they never did it. When podcast came out, the app, and then he told Nori, yo, you know what? We should do a podcast. And then they called, and then they started calling, and we should call it a Dream Champs. And then that's the way they started. And then my boy Ali used to manage Nori. And he was working with Nori already, so he used to call me here and there from, you know, me doing the parties, and I started doing bookings for a lot of rappers, and they used to call me, Lee, I'm coming to Miami, you know, try to get me some money. And, all right, let me see if I can put you in one of my parties, or I'll get you another bookings. So Nori would call me, listen, you got anyone down here? Who's down here on your party or anyway? From, you know, rappers or artists, anybody. So I was like, oh, this person is here. I would tell him who was here, who I have in my party, and I was like, yo, what's up? What you need? And he would, yo, tell him to call me or give them a number, tell him I need them for my show. I said, for your show? All right, cool. But I didn't know what it was. And then one day, and then he started explaining, yo, my show is a podcast. Come to the show, come look at it, and you see it. I was like, yeah, try to make it in. Well, I was doing a lot of things, so, you know, I was all right, cool. So one day, and then I kept helping him with artists, just getting him in contact with whoever was out here. And he would just call him, book him, and he was like the third show. I think the DMX episode was the third show, or the fourth show. I think that was the first one I went to. The first one was with Jadakiss. I don't recall when was my first episode that I actually went to see it, to look at it. Because I'm like, I already helped him with getting a couple of guys, and he keeps inviting me. Let me just go. Like, what the heck am I doing? And then I was like, I went to the show. I was like, oh, man, I kind of like this. And I just got more, like, inspired me to see it, to watch it, I was, hey, man, I see something here. Like, this is kind of cool. Like, I think this can go somewhere, you know, can move up somewhere else to another planet, like I call it. So, I just started working with him and helping them. And we was doing it for a couple of months, like, without getting paid. Not them, not us, nobody. Like. We did probably like 6 or 8 months, and then when we did the first interview we did with DMX, Nolly changed it from, because they had it, like, some people was hating, so they had us in CBS, in the category, they had us as an entertainment instead of putting our show on in hip-hop, in the hip-hop genre, right? So Nolly was like, why are we in entertainment and not on the hip-hop section? He asked, I think it was CBS. And they were, I don't know, because this person said that you guys, that's where you guys should be. Said, no, we a hip-hop talk show. You got to put us in hip-hop. And then the Mac interview just went up the roof, too. We did like 1 million in a couple of days, listeners. And it was like, by the 8th day, something like that, they were like, listen, what's the numbers now? And they like, CBS was, oh, the number was going so crazy that we don't even know. We can't even tell. But we've been over 1 million. As a matter of fact, we went over 2 million listeners already. We was like, what? We just wanted to do 300, 100,000. Because that's what podcast was doing. The podcast wasn't doing those numbers. I think we was probably the first one to do millions listeners in one day. So then we just went up the roof after that. But we also we love it, and this is Dream Chase is like, it's not a fake, it's not a script. Talk right. They don't tell you what to say, what to do, what to ask. Yeah. Now we organic, we really want to give, like, Nori EFM really, like, we all, the whole team really want to give the flowers to the legends, you know, because nobody really does that, you know. Then they gone and they want to show them love, man. Now we want to show you love while you're here. You know, which is a real concept, and it's a real, it's true. Like, this is not, we're not faking this. Oh, no, but this is what we want to do. We didn't do it for the money. We just did. We, oh, yeah, okay, let's do it. You know what? Yeah, let's do that. Let's do it for the legends, and let's show them love. Like, EFN and Noi wasn't really thinking about, oh, we're going to make millions with this, or we're gonna do 1 million listeners in one day, when everyone is doing 100,000, 200, 300, maybe the most. 300, and we was gonna do 1 million. We never. I mean, I didn't see it that way. Like, I didn't know it was gonna get this big, just like hip hop did.
But what you all did, yeah, you all rewrote the rules in terms of how this was. I mean, when we think about some of the interviews that you had, rest in peace, DMX, because we know how. As stellar his career was, we know the struggles he had in his personal life. I believe that's why he resonated with so many people the way he did, because he was a flawed individual, but he was, it's like we looked at him as that family member that he may have had his problems, but you know what? We didn't give a fuck. We loved him anyway, because we knew that his heart, and we knew we wanted to see him overcome whatever he was dealing with. One of the greatest interviews in a series of many great interviews you all have done on that show. Of course, shout out to Mike Geronimo. We had him on our show as well, and that was a revealing show with Mike Geronimo that he had with y'all.
That's my guy.
And King,
great guy.
Me and King were like, wow. After we watched that, me and King were on the phone talking about it, like, yo.
Yeah, man, that was one of the best ones. My other favorite one you guys had was MC Shan, because Shan was one of our favorite craziest guests.
Yeah, that was a wild one. He was crazy.
Shout out to Shan, man.
He was crazy. He couldn't. Like, he was. A lot of them, you got to understand, too. Like, sometimes I look at him, I'm like, wait a minute. But it's like, a lot of them, they just feel good that somebody's still, like, you know, like, man, we still get recognized out here, you know. That's like Snoop Dogg said that when we gave them the flowers, he was like, man, this is like the Grammys to me. Like, he was like, what? You said, like, our flowers to you, it's like the Grammys to you? You can't have grammar? We feel good. We're like, okay, we're doing what we're supposed to do, what we started, the reason why we started. Like, to give them the flowers, to let, like, to let this whole new generation that sometimes they don't even recognize, like the old school, like they say, you know, like the 90s, the 80s music. They think it just it's about them and that thing. We're here just for this.
We were like, man.
Yeah, what I like about you guys, though, is that y'all keep it within music. Y'all keep it within culture. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah, it gets crazy every once in a while, but that comes with the territory. But see, y'all guys' main focus is to give people their appreciation and the stories behind the music. It's like the episode that you guys did with Ray and Ghost. That's one of my probably my top five that you guys did, because you guys got like 4 hours in. And you know, this is attention span era, which hard to us keep attention for 30 minutes. So y'all kept me in tune for 4 hours with that.
Yeah.
How long was it?
That episode was like 4 hours.
Yeah.
And Mike Geronimo, too. Almost everybody is 4 hours. Almost everybody is 4 hours.
Now, do y'all plot that out, or is it pretty much with the programming direction, you all just have as much time as y'all want to do just to do it?
Like, Drinches, everything about Drinches is organic, to be honest.
Got you.
Like the way it started, the way it's going, like we don't do script. That's what I'm saying. Like we are real talks. Like we really care about the legends. We care about our fans, just like our fan cares about us and care about the show. Like if they don't like somebody, if someone is there, like if we had any guest, like a new guest or someone that for them is not a legend yet, they go at us. Like they really take it far. They're like, what are you guys doing? This is not about, like, this guy is not a legend. Like, why you even had him on the show? Like, well, he has nothing to do with hip-hop or whatever the case may be. But our fans, like, are real fans. Like, they really get hurt when the show doesn't go according to our concept, which is to the legends. They really get mad. So we take it that serious. But it is organic. We don't plan anything. No, it's not writing down questions or any of that. Not even ask the fans, like on Twitter. He goes on Twitter, oh, we're going to have this person this week. Any questions? Like, not interact with the people, like with the fans, with his fans and with the Drink Champs fans. And see what they say, oh, we're going to have JC tomorrow. You guys say, you have any questions, any story or anything that you know about them that you want me to bring it up?
Man,
and he gives them the opportunity. He gives the fans the chance, like, to feel like they part of the show too. Like, you're important too. If you got something, I like it. I'm using it.
So that's how you're supposed to do it. I mean, when y'all had Cormega on the show, we were like, and Cormega is like one of our favorite MCs ever.
Yeah, he is.
I mean, but Cormega, you know, it's wildly king because Cormega is like one of the best ever to do it. But if you're a real hip hop head and you really know that QB shit like we do, and of course King hosts his show Screwball Radio with Comic and Poet, you know, and they're from QB, you know, so, and I'm a lifelong QB hip hop head. So it's like, we all know that history. It was great because that was Mega's introduction to a panoramic audience of people to really, really know how great he is, you know. And Nori, to watch what Nori has transitioned from, you know, I mean, he has really, really, really grown into being a terrific host. Keeps it light, always comical, never puts anybody on the spot. He doesn't interrogate like a certain other personality that has his show, you know, that everybody goes on and then they get mad when they feel like he the police. you know, you all have a very welcoming and very welcoming and a very, very, very warm vibe. It really, and this is part of Nori's second act. Still a hell of an artist. I got that Capone and Noriega, you know, the Lessons album. Absolutely fucking loved it. I'm like, but it's just, you all have something that will live on forever.
Thank you.
For what you inspire us. You know, to have you on the show. Man, to have you on the show. Yeah.
I appreciate that. You know, I like that you guys, you like my work and you like where I became from, where I become. And it just makes me feel good because, you know, it shows that I'm doing a good job and people are recognizing me, even though I'm not doing it for that. I'm doing it because I like it, because I love it. Everything in it, from doing the parties all the way to now, from getting talking shit on the intro to renting luxury renters, you know? And it's like this, my whole life has been like a big surprise. Like God is great, to be honest. Because
Amen.
Like he's always there for you, even when you don't need them. When you don't need him, he's still there for you. When you have him, when you're not. When you're hungry, when you're not. When you're jobless, when you have many jobs, many opportunities, he puts opportunity in your hands, and if you don't know how to use it, then, you know, it's up to you. And if it's, but that's his purpose, like, for you that he has, you're always going to get it. You just got to pay attention to it.
It's called receiving the blessings as opposed to doing things to block it. I never expect, mm-hmm. you saw what I sent you, Lee. And everybody used to tell me, like, you know, Thomas, you know, you should do a podcast. I'm like, or you should be a host of a show. I tell this story. I've told it before on air. I'll tell it again. This was 11 years ago. It's a little drawn out, but I'll try to make it as fast as possible. Shout out to Red Cafe and Shakedown. Rest in peace to his former road manager, Gregory, a.k.a. Bullet, you know, Marat. So I was at the mall when my man's had his clothing store there, and Red was supposed to come to the store to do a, you know, this, you know, but they ended up not making it. They got tied up. I didn't have any money on me, but something just told me, go to the Norva. It's in downtown Norfolk where, he was going to perform that night. This is when French Montana was just beginning to get big because French was opening up for him. Actually, Red was opening up, and then French was doing the show. This is when they were both signed to Bad Boy. But something just said, Thomas, just go. Don't worry about the money. Just go. So I went. And I was out there for 4 hours standing. And lo and behold, Bullet comes out. And I recognize him, and he recognizes me. He's like, yo, you here? I'm like, yeah, I'm here. He's like, nigga, come on with us. And next thing I know, I see Red and the whole crew, and I cannot make this shit up. You will never guess whose family was in town for one of their relatives' weddings. Robert De Niro. Ooh. One of his family members were here in Virginia for one of their relatives' weddings. And so they're sitting up in there with them as well. So it's like they all remember me. I got all the memorabilia with me. We're just talking about everything. And one of them says off to the side while I'm talking to Raymond Cruz, that used to be Red's videographer, and one of them says off to the side, I hear they like, he needs his own show. So
I thought you became a host?
Well, actually, I became a host, Lee, because on this show I used to call in. Me and King have been friends on Facebook for over 10 years. So I would always, so when he started off the cuff, I was pretty much listening about maybe a year into it. So some years ago, I called into the show, and I would, you know, I would always call in. So Sandman, who's one of the hosts with us, he was the one that introduced the idea of me becoming part of the team. And it was unanimous. Tim Chinchilla King were like, we need to bring him on. And that's how
he ain't lying, because, yeah, because, you know, when we had, I think when we had Spice One on, you called up there, and then you called up there when we had South Central Cartel, and I was just like, man, the way he answers these questions, man, he's giving us a geography lesson. He's coming up with facts that I don't even know. Bring him on there, man. Bring him on. And he ain't even asking, he ain't even asking for a check. Bring him on.
We need him, definitely.
Bring him on. He ain't asking for no paper.
The biggest payment I've ever had is them believing in me. I'm living the dream of doing something I thoroughly enjoy. I love these guys. These are my brothers and my sisters. I love them dearly. They've given me an opportunity to live, to do something that I never thought I could do. I never thought I had a personality to do it. I didn't think I had the charisma to do it.
And that's what I want to ask him, too, man. I want to ask him this, too. Like, is the challenge of finding that personality and getting that charisma? You know what I'm saying? Like you got to find that chemistry. And Nori and Finn, they already had that. But see, that's what a lot of people fail to realize, that you got to find that chemistry with your host, so that way y'all can gel together. Because y'all ain't jealous, y'all might start
it's gonna be a problem.
Punching each other out on the air like no jumping.
So true. Now you gotta have not just with the host, but with the whole team too.
Yeah,
with the whole crew.
Yes, it's definitely a team effort. Everyone has to have that mutual respect for one another.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you have that energy too.
There's one thing that Puffy,
they fighting every week over there.
There is one thing that Puffy said that that I never forgot, that I always took to heart with the lesson, Puffy, you know, because Puffy gets it. You know, people can say what they want about Puff, but Puff is a worker. And Puff said, always watch the people who are going hard for you when you don't ask them to. Watch for the people who are making moves for you when you don't ask them to. Those are your people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true.
And that is fact. You know, that is 100% fact.
You know, because they believe in the vision. You know, they believe in it. And they're... And when you're starting something, the biggest challenge in terms of entrepreneurship, which all of us are, being creative, especially creatives of color, is understanding that our vision is something that we see that everybody may be blind to. They might not even be braille in it in terms of feeling it. But it's always a situation of the perseverance. There are the elements of moving with intention, integrity, and individuality. Intention with a genuine goal and vision, integrity of being honest and attaining that goal, and individuality because nobody can do it like you. Only you can be you. Like DMS said, you know, do you. And like he just said, Liz, you can do what I do, but just in your own way. And with Off the Cuff Radio, we've had so many people who have helped us out, who we've met along this journey. Because we do a lot of this ourselves, but we don't do all of it ourselves. We got a lot of people behind us who have helped us out grow this. And we're still 545 shows. We have one of the executive producers of Drink Champs on our show. Lee, you don't know how big this
is. Thank you.
This is huge for us.
Yeah.
The fact that you acknowledged us.
Appreciate
because
it.
We've had so many guests we've reached out to who said no. We've had a lot of yeses, but we've had a lot of no's because some people said, well, you know, y'all ain't big enough or we want to be paid for this. And Lee, you didn't hesitate. We made it work. We got it. We managed, once we really got to connect and communicate, we got it locked in for what we're having on a historical show tonight. So it shows no matter what people. Yeah, it shows no matter what people say, no matter how people may try to deter you and to discourage you, their word is not God's word, and God's word is what your path is. And once he plans that path for you, prosperity is the blessing. And we keep preaching it. Keep pushing.
Absolutely.
It, keep pushing.
I like how you said that. I love that.
So when you look at the game today, Lee, in terms of how a lot of artists are trying to get out there, in terms of how they promote themselves, because you've come from this, what do artists have to understand about their branding? Nay, we want your input on this as well. What do you all see that artists have to do in order to put themselves in a position to be on platforms like Drink Champs, or just on platforms in general? They're really, because, you know, so many do things, but they do the wrong things to get celebrity. Not all celebrity is good, and sometimes trying to be famous turns into infamous. Lee, what have you seen about how artists need to kind of move in terms of where they're trying to get to?
I think it's your work ethic. It's like you got to put in work. You got to work. If you want to do something, if you want to be successful, you got to work. You just got to put in work. Give content to everybody every day. Mm-hmm. The more content you give them, the more it's going to get out there. And even if it's not working for a couple of months or a year, it doesn't matter. You never know. There's a lot of songs out there that they became hit a year later. People recognize the song a year later. And you see that year later that song just took off and they just blew up. And it's just like that, but they kept pushing it. So if you keep pushing, like they say in your case, in our case, a talk show, you got to just work and just put in your heart. You got to love
it. Yeah.
That's the main thing. You got to love it first. If you don't love it, you're not going to show. You're not gonna put in the work that needs to get to another level, to get to another plant, like I said.
Yeah. Nate?
I agree. Yes, I absolutely agree, and I must say that, you know, like you said earlier, you know, don't accept no for an answer. You know, if you have to love it first. If you don't love it, you're not going to keep going, and you can't allow the opinions of others to affect what it is that you desire to do. And even more importantly than that, you have to know where you want to go as an artist. You have to know who you are as an artist, because if you don't know that, then every time someone gives you a suggestion, you'll go for it. And not every suggestion is something that you should take into consideration. You know, you have to take the advice of people who are pretty much in the same lane as you, but were successful in traveling that lane. And a lot of people don't do that. Some artists are like all over the place. And if you're all over the place, even like with some of us managers and, you know, executives and so on and so forth, if you're all over the place and you don't have a clear plan, you know, then you're not going to be very successful in that area. So it's important for you to know who you are and where you're going, to stay focused. That is the number one thing right there. You must stay focused, because it's easy. There are so many different distractions out here, and it's so easy to get lost in the sauce, and that's something that you don't want to do as an artist.
But I think once you, if you love what you do, you're not going to let nothing distract you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to stay locked in, Lee, right? You got to stay locked in. It's like a pit bull on a bone, you know, a starving pit bull. It's not easy to shake a pit bull off of you. So if that's something that you absolutely positively want to do, then you have to lock onto it, lockjaw, and not, you can't pay attention. You know, you can't get caught up in the Joneses. You can't get caught up in what someone else is doing. And a lot of people, you know, they start watching what other people are doing and how successful someone else is. And we all, on the inside, each of us, we've been given a gift and a talent, you know, and we have success on the inside of us just waiting to burst out. But if we're so focused on what someone else is doing, then we'll never reach our full potential. So we have to just lock in. We have to zero in on what it is that God has given us to do, the purpose that he's planned for our lives and not the other person.
Yeah. Like Pharrell said one the episode we did with him, he said, God has a purpose for everyone, and nothing in the world can take that away from him. But you also got to put in the work. That's why.
Absolutely. Faith without work.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you act because he's just, like, he's not going to put it in your hand here. That's it. No, he's going to show you the way. And listen, this is what I have for you. Now it's on you to take it to the next level. And appreciate it.
And we kind of touched on that the last time, Thomas, that came when I said, like, even with, like, the artists that I work with, when they come to me and they say, well, Nay, I want you to manage me, this, and I always ask them, are you willing to invest this in yourself? You won't be very successful if you're putting your career in solely in the hands of another person, because people have lives, they have other obligations, and not everyone is going to work as hard for you as you would, especially if you really want it. If you really want it, you are your brand. We spoke about that too last week. Like, you're your brand, so you have to work hard at the, you know, not only developing your brand but making sure your brand is out there for all to see, especially if you want to be successful. So putting in the work, Lee, I 100% agree with you. You have to put in the work. Just like we talked about earlier today about the promotion and, you know, planning parties and, you know, the flyers and such that, you know, we had to put out and hand deliver, call, or whatever we had to do back then. You know, when we didn't have social media, this kind of platform, you know, we had to put in the work. We had to invest in ourselves. I mean, that's the only way that we were going to be able to make our money. You know, and even now, if an artist wants that notoriety, you have to put in the work, or you're not going to get very far in this industry. Because number one, people are only willing to invest in those who are willing to invest in themselves. And somehow people lose that. Some people lose it. They think that it's going to happen overnight, and it doesn't happen overnight. For some people, there's a few people where, you know, success does happen overnight. But for others, you know, you have to work. And it may not happen today, may not happen tomorrow, next month, next year, but if you stay at it, if you're persistent and consistent, eventually you're going to get that break.
Correct. That's how it is. If you don't stay home on the couch, you're never going to go nowhere.
Yeah, and that's something that anything worth having is worth working for. Because ultimately, you're going to be the couch potato or you're going to be the French fries that gets up and sizzles. You're going to make it hot. You know, you're going to get down there and do what you got to do. And
people,
I think a lot of times when we look at the game, y'all, we've looked at this because social media has at times in the worst elements of it has given people a false sense of importance, because it's not hard now today to get out there and get yourself seen. So one thing artists have to understand is this: just because you're out there does not mean that you're famous. Celebrity means you're widely known. Celebrity and being rich are not mutually exclusive. They don't always go together. You can be known and be the brokest motherfucker around, or you can be the anonymous one and be the most wealthiest. And I'd rather be anonymous and wealthy rather than known and broke. Broke, you know, being known doesn't pay my bills if I can't get paid for it.
Exactly.
You know, and that, and we have a lot, and people will say, well, don't you know who I am because I got such and such? I'm like, listen, how many artists have we seen got a million views on a video and then they flamed out after that? Where's the follow-up? You know, you can look, like Biggie said, your reign on top was short like Leprechaun. You know, I mean, and the fact, you know, and if you can't, you know, it just shows, you know, like Nas said on, you know, what he said on Classic, on his verse, he said, well, you made a hit, that's nice. Now let's see you do the same trick twice. This is something that takes hard work, paying dues, and a method. And you have to know how once you get your foot in the door, that you have that door to go in and out of, in terms of if you need time away to rest yourself, that's fine. Because we all need our time. We all need our mental. But when you're ready to come back through that door, it's like with Jay-Z. When Jay-Z first started, everybody thought that fast rapping style he had, it wasn't going to work. Hell, even Def Jam turned him down on the first go-round. Now, they got him on the second when the second album came out. That's when they signed him. You know, and Nas. Nas got turned down by Def Jam. Now, he eventually came back some years later. They got him some years later, But
I think every artist got turned down for all these ones.
Mm-hmm. But it's about being able to catch that lightning in a bottle. You know, and some people, they don't see it right away. But ultimately, some people who they write off, I remember when DMX had his first song, Born Loser, that was in 1992, you know, and it would still be 6 years before he eventually broke through with Get At Me Doll. There's still that infamous rap battle where he got in a fight and had his jaw broken and he was out rapping niggas with his jaw wired shut. I mean, he never quit. And
he never quit. He kept going.
Yeah, and found a fan base that was rabid for the rhymes that he gave. You know, Nas, you know, Live at the Barbecue on Main Source's album, Breaking Adams, 1990 on Wild Pitch Records. I mean, one of the illest verses ever. Nas was on like 16 when he did that. You know?
Because
Illmatic came out April 21st, I believe, 1994, if I got my dates right. And he was 20 when he released Illmatic. So you're figuring he and then Zebrahead dropped in 92, the movie, which Halftime appears on the soundtrack. So then there's Back to the Grill Again he did with MC Search. So he's bubbling. Wouldn't really hit until It Ain't Hard to Tell dropped in early 1994. It's the first official single off of Illmatic. But then he just begins to really, really, really like bubble. You know, it's an inspiration because I tell anybody, everybody tells you no until everybody says yes. And most importantly, you say, I know I can, and I gave myself affirmation for what I'm going to achieve and accomplish, and I don't need approval from anybody else because I'm my own audience, and I'll clap for myself.
Exactly.
And then everybody else will applaud as well.
Yeah.
Definitely, man. And you know, it's most important, it's about believing in your brand and believing in yourself because you're going to go through your hurdles. You're going to go through your setbacks and going through the BS and this business. But it takes resiliency. It takes consistency. And that once you outwork them, ain't nothing stopping you.
And but you gotta go harder after that. Once you outwork anyone, you just gotta keep going harder and harder. Because it can always come back. Like if you don't work, some people just get lazy. Like once they make it, they go, oh, I'm on top already, and they get lazy.
And you can. That's when you gotta stay the most hungry. It's once you get to the top. I was reading Rick Ross's book, Hurricanes, and I was reading Fat Joe's book, and both of them talk about how it wasn't happening for them right away. You know, Ross, by the time, people don't understand with Rosé, it took Ross 10 years to get to where he is today, you know?
Right,
but he kept pushing, You know, he always talks about when DJ Khaled played, you know, Hustling. You know, and he'll tell you himself, Khaled, when Khaled first heard him, Khaled didn't like his music. Khaled said it needed work. Ross was pissed at him at the time, but Ross was like, that was just a pride. He's like, but Khaled was telling me that I still was not there yet. But when Hustling hit and that song really took off and Khaled infamously played that song, well, famously played that song, like I think he played like 15 times back to back. Ross said he broke down and cried.
Yeah.
He was like, because I knew my life was never going to be the same again in a good way. He's like, I knew my life changed forever after that. I was on after that.
No, that's how it was. Man, but it was a pleasure to be with you guys. Like it's an honor, you know.
Lee, this has been an honor. Lee, you know you're welcome back anytime. You're more than welcome. And what that business
Thank
we
you.
Talked about, if you know anybody from your show, we would love to interview. Look, if Noria EFN wants to come on the show, we're more than – we would love to have – we'd be ecstatic to have them on as well as just as having you on. You know, we would be just as excited to have them. Any artists that you all at Drink Champs need help with in terms of helping to get out there, they're needing Nay. We have Nay's number. She's great with us. If you need anybody helping who needs help with a management direction – or you need press help with us, do not hesitate to get in touch with either one of us. And we would love to
Thank
have them on our
it.
Show if you see somebody. Yeah, anybody you want to bring on the show to help them get out on the press run, just to help them start out, we're here.
Yeah.
So,
appreciate it. Appreciate the invite, too.
We appreciate you for accepting. Yeah, man. So, definitely.
Enjoy the spill. Yeah, we're gonna have the episode up, man. I'm gonna send it to you when I get it up on YouTube this week, and we could just go from there.
Yeah.
But we thank you once again, man, for taking the time to build with us on this exclusive Wednesday. And we're gonna keep supporting y'all and doing what y'all are doing. I gotta finish watching the Marlon Wayans episode y'all did. Y'all got me busting out laughing, so you know I gotta continue.
Yeah, it's a funny one. Yeah, it's a funny one. Marlon Wayans is hilarious, to be honest. Good dude, too.
Yeah, y'all got to get Sean up there, too. Y'all got to bring both of them. We got to get that Wayans Brothers reunion.
Yeah, we got to get it. That is true.
Yeah.
We would like to. We would love to.
Yeah, we got to get them dudes up there, man. Have to come out to the intro. We brothers. We happy and we're singing and we're colored.
No, that's a classic. No, they legendary. They icons.
There they are.
So now I got to get ready now. I got to go to do this meeting real quick.
Absolutely.
All right, my man.
So I just
definitely
appreciate you guys.
Lee, appreciate you so much, Lee. You know we'll be in touch with you. You know, this don't stop here. We still working, and you know we're going to be in touch. So I'll try to hit you later this week, and we'll just chop it up some more. Like I said, I still got some more. Nay,
all right.
Thank you so much. We love you. Thank you so much, Nay, for joining us as well. King, this is another outstanding episode for the books.
Absolutely.
Brother, take us out of here. Take us out.
You don't know.
Thank
you. We're up out of here. We thank you once again. Big shout out to the Drink Champs family for this bill. And we will be
thank
back
you.
With
thank
y'all possibly
you.
Next week.
Thank you again, Lee. Thank
All right,
you,
cool.
DNA.
Likewise.
Yes. God bless, and we are out. Peace.